is Stephanie DeBruzzo. You may remember me from such Broadway shows as Avenue Q, such television shows as Sesame Street, and the musical episode of Scrubs. And I'm talking to Rabbi Saul Solomon on Dave's Gone By on UNC Radio. Yay!
Oh, shalom, shalom, my friends, shalom, my enemies, too. This is your old pal, Rabbi Saul Solomon, founder and spiritual leader of Temple Sons of Bitches in Great Neck, New York. And I am thrilled and delighted to be talking to an actress who was Tony nominated. She didn't win, but she was beaten by Idina Menzel, which is no small thing. So, the show that she was nominated for, Avenue Q, and she was hilarious and wonderful in it. She's also done a lot of off-Broadway stuff, and you hear her voice everywhere. You could hear it on Bert and Ernie's Great Adventures, something called The Book of Pooh, which is the diary I give my proctologist, Bear in the Big Blue House. She played Prairie Dawn on Sesame Street in later years, and in such entertainments as Cinder Elmo, Elmo Palooza, and you should pardon the expression, Elmo's Christmas Countdown. But for the moment, right now, you can go see Stephanie DeBruzzo in Jerry's Girls, devoted to the music of the great Jerry Herman. It is playing at the York Theater off Broadway in a church, you should pardon the expression, on St. Peter's on East 54th Street. We're going to talk to her about Jerry Herman. We're going to talk to her about Avenue Q. We're going to talk to her about doing voices. And we're talking to, most of all, Stephanie DeBruzzo. Welcome to the neighborhood. Shalom!
Hello, Rabbi Saul. Shalom. How are you?
I am good. I should probably say, since I assume you're Italian, I should say...
I am.
Buon tarde? Buona notte? No, now what is it? Buona dia?
My family came over from Italy, and they didn't teach us Italian because they wanted to keep it a secret language, so... I don't know much Italian, so you can say whatever you like.
Well, if I say whatever I like, I'll get thrown off the air, but you know... I read somewhere that your family was so wanting to be American, per se, rather than Italian, that even though your name is spelled with two Z's in there, like pizza,
yeah,
you've been pronouncing it, and everybody pronounces it DeBruzzo.
DeBruzzo. They anglicized it. Yes, they were told to acclimate. So, yes.
Yeah, because anybody reading your name would never think for a minute that it was Italian. You figure if they really wanted to change it, they might call you Stephanie Darwin, you know?
It's funny how many people ask me if I'm Italian, as if the apostrophe, the two Z's, and all of the facial hair doesn't tip them off. But, you know, and people also like to add a lot of consonants and vowels to my last name, so I've sort of stopped correcting them. You've read my website, I can tell.
A couple of times, yes. I've done a little bit of research on Stephanie DeBruzzo. Although, you never know, it could have been at Ellis Island, the guy taking your family name down hiccuped, and that's why you had the apostrophe there. Could have been Romanian.
The apostrophe is definitely there because it's DeBruzzo means from Abruzzi.
Oh,
and
okay.
I believe at one point in time, the Abruzzo region, I think the border changed at one point, and so I believe my family originated in Abruzzo.
Oh, I could have been Rabbi Saul Solomon de Krakow.
Exactly.
Could have happened. Could have been that way.
Exactly.
Now, this is your regular, normal, as it were, speaking voice.
More or less, I am a little tired, but yes, more or less, this is my regular speaking voice.
When did you realize, though, that you could do a number of different kinds of voices that could be used in cartoons and puppet things in musicals?
Yeah, I always really loved playing with character voices, probably as far back as, I don't know, maybe even elementary school. I was always imitating people and family, friends, and more in middle school and high school, I would play with funny voices.
So, for example, I think I know you best, and most people might know you best, from playing the Munster character on Avenue Q,
yeah,
right?
Kate Munster, yes.
So, in order to make the Kate Munster voice, which is more high-pitched and cute and cartoonish, what do you physically do to your nose, your throat, your tongue, all of it?
Well, it's very technical.
Oh.
It's very hard to describe how. You know, whenever people say, well, how do you do those things with your voice, I just say, play. You can place things in various, you could place them in your nose, you can get more nasal, or you can bring something more to the front, and you can make your voice a little bit higher. Oh, I'm tired, I didn't know I'd be doing this one. Now, interestingly, you mentioned in your introduction to me that I took over the role of Prairie Dawn in the last few years. Now, Kate Monster, I placed her in a Prairie Dawn-type cadence, not an imitation of Prairie Dawn. Interestingly, Prairie Dawn is much higher. Kate is way up here because she's a very sweet and adorable little girl.
Oh, my God. That just shrunk my prostate, by the way.
Of course it did. And you know, Kate Monster, she's been around the block. So
yes.
That differentiates Prairie Dawn and Kate Monster. I had no clue when I originated Kate Monster that I would someday get to play the great and wonderful Prairie Dawn, originated by the great and powerful Fran Brill, who retired a few years ago. Great, wonderful actress, stage, screen, all sorts of things. There are just different things that you do, ways that you place things, ways that you use your tongue and the range of your voice, and whether you make something gravelly or nasally, or it's sometimes you just have to try it and do something that doesn't physically hurt your voice. But the play is the way we come up with all of our characters, whether they're puppet characters or animated characters, or even if you're giving a characterization to a human character, if you're doing something, if you're, you know, on stage and being really broad and heading into that John Wally territory, it's all about play. I love playing a lot of wide variety of characters, whether it's in animation or puppetry or none of those things.
And also the thing about you is you tend to be a bit of a do-it-yourselfer. As when you first started doing voices and characters and play and puppetry, yes. You kind of taught yourself?
I did. I did teach myself puppetry. I had started watching Sesame Street and the Muppets again when I was in college, and I was looking at them with fresh eyes. I'd always been a fan, but I'd never looked at it from an acting standpoint. And I began thinking, oh my gosh, these guys are doing so many different great characters. You know, one guy, Frank Oz, is playing Miss Piggy and Fozzie and Animal and Bert and Rover and Cookie Monster. And realizing that I could do so many things as a character performer without it mattering what I looked like. So I began teaching myself puppetry with the specific goal of being a Muppet performer. Not even wanting to be a generic puppeteer. I didn't want to do birthday parties. I wanted to work for the Muppets. I wanted to work for the Jim Henson Company because that was the gold standard. And they were doing the best work, the best comedy, the best characters. And so, yeah, I taught myself by watching and looking at whatever documentary footage was available at the time. This was between 1989 and 1993, so this was before the internet and before YouTube. And I fell into it and built the worst-looking puppets you ever saw just so I could get the experience of figuring out if I could physically do it.
Your puppets tend to be, were they always hand up the tuchus into the mouth?
Yes.
Or do you also do bunraku or any of those kind of stringy, weird...
marionettes with the strings. Bunraku, very impressive that you've done your homework on that. You know, I liken puppetry to dance. There are many different forms and styles of puppetry. So hand and rod puppetry, which is mostly what the Muppets is and what we use in Avenue Q, is very different. It's a very different style and technique than marionette. It's the difference between being a ballet dancer and a tap dancer.
Oh.
You can be an incredible ballerina but not know how to tap to save your life.
And actually, I am an incredible ballerina. You wouldn't know it to look for me, but
I can tell just by the sound of your voice.
Yeah.
Incredible. They call you Twinkle Toes, right?
They call me some other things, but that's in there. Yeah.
But anyway, so I've tried marionette, and I couldn't keep the damn thing from swinging. I've done a little bit of bunraku and tabletop when I first came to the city. We wind up using some bunraku techniques on Sesame Street when we're doing full body against the green screen, because there you have the puppeteers matted out by green screen, by Ultimat, but we're basically having someone on the feet, someone on the arms, someone in the head. So,
wait, three different people working the same...
Sometimes as many as five different people working the same character, yes, absolutely.
I can understand Snuffy.
You see a puppet in full body.
Oh.
There are multiple, and usually there, you know, if you see a character like Fozzie or Cookie Monster, there are two people working that, because it's what you call a live hand puppet. So you have the person who's doing the voice, their dominant hand is in the mouth, their non-dominant hand, well, because we have some left-handed puppeteers, but for the most part, your right hand is in the mouth, your left hand is in the left hand of the puppet. It's like a glove, like you'd see in Cookie or Ernie or Fozzie. And then you have another person, because puppeteers don't have three arms, doing the right hand. In Avenue Q, you saw that in Mickey and Trekkie Monster.
They were
performed live. Well, when we're doing something like if Elmo is dancing full body, you have someone in the head. Sometimes that person can't also do the hand, so you might have one person on both hands or two people, one on each hand, and someone in the feet, and it all has to be coordinated. And we've worked together long enough, especially the Muppet performers on Sesame Street, we've worked together for a very long time, so we know each other's rhythms and we know how to communicate to each other well.
And you are still with Sesame Street, correct? You're still doing Prairie? Yeah, wow.
I started in 1993 in season 25, only a handful of days, but I became more of a regular in 1998, and I've been there ever since, and we're going to start shooting our 49th season this fall.
Oh, mit Mazel, mit Glück. That means congratulations in my language, kind of. But I don't know since you're still working there, if you can talk about this, but there's been a little bit of Henson controversy recently. They fired their Kermit. Did you know the guy?
Well, all of the Muppet performers know each other. I would much rather talk about the permanent Jim Henson exhibit that just opened at the Museum of the Moving Image.
Oh, good deflection there. Yeah.
It is an incredible exhibit. It's going to be there permanently. My husband, Craig Shemin, is the president of the Jim Henson Legacy.
Ooh.
He's presenting screenings monthly. Great, wonderful work. A lot of Henson's work is being transferred to high definition. Some of his commercials and experiments, they're going to be shown, I think, either later this month or next month. Check movingimage.us for that schedule. But I love the history of the Muppets, and I never got to meet Jim Henson.
Oh.
He died when I was a freshman in college.
Did your husband?
My husband did work for the company, yes. He started as an intern in 1987, and then he began working full-time for the company in 1988, fresh out of college. So he worked for a couple of years. When Jim Henson passed away, my husband says he had just started feeling comfortable with calling him Jim. But yeah, my husband had, he's done many things with the company. At the time Jim Henson died, my husband was still working in PR. So you can imagine the day that Jim died, very unexpectedly.
Well,
my husband was the only one in the office who was handling all of the phone calls, and
oh my God!
Yeah. But you know the Henson Company is full of a lot of people who've been there for decades, a lot of really tight knit people, great people, people who build the puppets, work at the workshop, puppeteers. I mean,
and you are only Sesame Street. Are you involved with any of the Muppet shows, the Muppet movies?
The Disney Muppets. I've done a handful of things in the background for various things. That Muppets Letters to Santa special that was, oh my gosh, probably 10 years ago by now. Done background work on that. I haven't done as much with the Disney Muppet characters, but my friends have, and I'm really proud of the work that they do. I'm really grateful to know all those guys.
Well, we're grateful to have Stephanie D'Abruzzo with us in the neighborhood. Remember that she's a theater actress to most of us, even though you hear her voices in all these different shows. So we want to talk about your work, especially your Tony-nominated work, I should say, in Avenue Q. Now, take us through it. Take us through from seeing, I guess, a casting notice in backstage and say, oh, I should try out because it's got puppets. How did this come about?
No, what happened at all.
Oh.
In fact, interestingly enough, it's a wonderful thing that I'm at the York Theater right now doing Jerry's Girls, because the very first staged reading of Avenue Q was at the York Theater in May of 2000. I got involved with the project through a couple of sources. Rick Lyon, who played Mickey and Trekkie and who designed and built all the puppets for Avenue Q, he met Jeff and Bobby, Jeff Marks and Bobby Lopez, in the BMI songwriting workshop. Rick had done presentations of their first musical, which was called Kermit, Prince of Denmark. They won the Kleban Award for that.
Wow.
And then they met my husband when my husband was still working at the Jim Henson Company. And, by the way, I'd known Rick for years working on Sesame Street. They met my husband at the Henson Company trying to sell Kermit, Prince of Denmark to the company, and my husband said, well, you know, maybe you should focus on doing things that with original characters that you don't need to worry about.
Oh, copyright and
Well, actually, we're working on this show right now. It was originally going to be a television show, Avenue Q. The first title was called Avenue Q: Children's Television for 20-somethings.
Oh, cute. Okay. Yeah. A little wordy.
But they presented it as a staged reading, and they said they were looking for a female puppeteer because Rick Lyon had recommended someone to them and thought that they'd be too busy. And my husband said, my wife's a puppeteer. Well, it turns out Rick had recommended me. Thought I would be too busy. My husband said, my wife's a puppeteer. So that's how I got involved with this reading. And Anne Harada was in that first reading, and John Tartaglia, and Rick Lyon and myself. So four of the original cast members who...
And all
Broadway, we're in this very first reading.
All four of you had some puppetry.
Not Anne Harada, but she played Christmas Eve. She played a human.
Yeah, but yes.
Well, Rick and Johnny and myself. I mean, Johnny had worked on Sesame Street. Rick had worked on Sesame Street and had worked with Jim Henson when he was still alive. And by the time, and then when Jennifer Barnhart joined us for the Vineyard Theater run, at that point in 2003, between the four of us, we had 45 to 50 years of professional puppetry experience between the four of us.
Wow. Now, let's not jump, though. So you, as an actress, and so many actresses and actors, they do a zillion readings. They do a reading a couple of times a month. Mm-hmm. Did you realize in 2000, when you were working on what was to be then a TV thing, and you looked at the script and the songs, did you go, oh, this is special. This is going to happen.
Funny, I made my New York stage debut in that reading on the York Theater stage. I hadn't done any theater in New York. I was just doing Sesame Street and voiceovers, and I had wanted to go back to doing stage work, but, it just wasn't happening. When we did this reading, we knew the songs were very, very good. The first reading was very different. It was presented as almost like a pilot for the show, and then it was in two acts. The first act was sort of an episode, and then the second act was sort of scenes and songs that either didn't fit in this episode or would ostensibly be other songs that other composers wrote.
Hmm.
Actually, Kate Monster sang the Gold, Rich, and Heisler song, Taylor the Latte Boy. She also sang Like It Was from Merrily We Roll Along under the setup that she got invited to her 10-year high school reunion. Says, Nikki, why can't it be like it was? So we did this. We knew the songs were good, but we didn't know how an audience would respond to it. And once we heard the audience response...
At the reading.
At the reading. The puppeteer, the performers, we all knew it was a stage piece just based on the reaction. And the boys were like, no, we really want it to be TV. And then when our producers approached them, they saw the light. It became really obvious early on that this was something that was best as a shared theatrical experience. So we did one reading, and then we did another reading later that same month. And then we started doing presentations. We did BMI smokers and BMI presentations and composers' nights. And I never thought we would get to do the show without music stands, to be perfectly honest. We were very fortunate that we got to further develop the show, do further readings, to do it at the O'Neill Musical Theater Conference, and then eventually the Vineyard Theater and the new group believed in us enough to put us up off Broadway. But even then, I had no real concept of how far it would go. I've said this since the dawn of time, not everything good is successful, and not everything successful is good.
Of course.
We knew we were doing something that we thought was good, but we didn't know if that was going to translate into any sort of success. And even once we got to Broadway, which I still couldn't believe that it was happening until the ink was dry on the contract, we didn't know if anyone was going to pay $100 to see a puppet show.
Huh.
Fortunate, by having people see us early on and spread the word and drag their friends kicking and screaming to the theater, people would talk to me after the show and they would tell me, straightforward, I hate puppets, I hate musicals, but I loved your show.
Yeah, well, there's something special about having it. It's just that funny. It's just that clever and smart and the right attitude for the time.
Mm-hmm.
And yet I say for the time, the thing is still running.
It
ran a while on Broadway.
Longer at New World Stages than it ran on Broadway.
So then here's a question for you. First of all, you were working for Sesame Street pretty much full time, mm-hmm, by the time you got Avenue Q. Could you do both, or did you have to take off?
No, I did try to do both. The problem is I gave myself a hard out at 5:30. I said I need to leave by 5:30 so I could have time to have dinner and warm up and do all the things I needed to do before the show. The thing about Sesame Street, because I don't play a regular character, at least at the time I was not playing a regular character, I would play a lot of one-off characters and walk-on characters. I just wouldn't necessarily be scheduled all the time.
Oh.
So I didn't do double duty a lot with Sesame Street and Avenue Q. I did do some. There was another show that I was doing around the time, around 2003, 2004, called Ubi. It ran on Noggin. If anybody's familiar with it, it was bare hands puppets, like literally my hand with eyeballs on it. It was a very sweet show.
Isn't that the guy who did the Small Potatoes?
Well, that was Little Airplane Productions produced Ubi. They also did Wonder Pets.
Right. Oh, yeah, no, but I think Little Airplane also did the thing called Small Potatoes that I love.
Did they? I'm not familiar with Small
Potatoes. Oh, you need to see them.
Oh, yeah?
It's brilliant. It's funny. They're so lovable and cute. Just letting you know.
They made an arrangement during production that Ubi would not schedule me to work on Wednesdays, and then I would have Mondays off from the show, so there would be 2 days in the week where I didn't have to do double duty.
But
it was exhausting, but
yeah.
I'm very proud of the fact that during that time, and I got sick too, but I never missed a show. Like during that time I was doing Ubi, I missed shows, but during the time I was doing Ubi and Avenue Q and Sesame Street and Avenue Q.
As a matter of fact, I think I read somewhere that when you were doing the clip of the Muppet, well no, it was the Sesame Street Muppets with R.E.M., doing
yes.
Shiny Happy Monsters.
That was long before Avenue Q.
That was before, but you were sick that day.
When I was.
You had to do the voice for that adorable song with the R.E.M. people.
Yeah, the Kate Pearson.
Yeah, that part.
Happy Monsters.
So.
Well, that's still one of the high points of my career.
Well, was it great to work with R.E.M.? I mean, what was it like that day when they came in? I mean, were they friendly?
Well, I didn't know that I would actually get to sing with them in the studio. You know, at Sesame Street, we pre-record most of our songs. Just because of the technical elements of puppetry, you don't want to worry about singing. Also, it's really not the best position to be in to do live singing. I mean, I have done it, but it's not ideal. So we pre-record our songs, and I thought they would lay down their tracks, you know, in Georgia or wherever, you know, I don't remember whether they were touring at the time, but wherever they happened to be, and then I would lay it down later. And that morning, I went downstairs. At the time, we were... it used to be called Master Sound, now it's Kaufman Astoria Sound, in the basement of Kaufman Astoria Studios. Go into a studio, and I find out I'm recording in the same room, at the same time, with Mike Mills and Michael Stipe. And I didn't take any pictures down there.
Oh!
Well, I didn't have a phone with a camera in it, because that didn't exist. You know, I'd film. I didn't bring my camera that day. I was sick. The one picture that exists of me, I'm not wearing any makeup. It was so surreal. You just don't think that those things could possibly happen. And they were so great. And the thing is,
yeah.
And R.E.M. fans know that Shiny Happy People is not a song that they would ever play in their shows, in their concerts. So we're reviewing the song, and as a fan, I think I knew the song better than they did, because I'd heard it more recently than they had.
Wow.
Well, because, you know, I would listen to Out of Time. It's a great album.
Yeah. And, no, but it's just funny that you would be telling Michael Stipe, oh, no, then, you know, it goes like this.
Well, no, I didn't know. I didn't say anything.
It was
listening to the two of them say, now, wait, this is the part. Okay, yeah, right, you did that. And that's where Kate Pearson came in, right. Like, they were just having to, it was just the smallest little brush up. I don't want to overstate it.
No, no.
Make you think that they forgot the song. No, but it was just this tiny little brush up of they hadn't sung it since they recorded it. And at that point, that was 7 years had gone by. So that was fascinating to me that at that point I had heard, it was clear that I had heard the song more recently than they had. But after recording Avenue Q, I understand that. I don't listen to the cast recording myself that often. So I get it.
Yeah.
I don't necessarily know that Michael Stipe is driving in his car listening to
Of course.
Automatic for the People. I don't, maybe he is, because Automatic for the People is one of the greatest albums ever, but I don't know that's what he chooses to listen to in his free time.
No, maybe he chooses to listen to the cast album for Avenue Q.
Well, Well, that would be amazing if he did.
Or perhaps he listens to, oh, I don't know, MAME or Hello Dolly or Milk and Honey.
Talk about good stuff.
Yeah, talk about a segue here. You're going to be doing a show, or you are in the middle, I should say, of doing a show in Mufti, as you should pardon the expression, in Mufti at the York Theater. They're over in a church. I don't know why more synagogues can't do this, but they're in a church at St. Peter's on East 54th Street and Lexington Avenue. This is a show that was on Broadway years ago that was already a compilation of greatest hits for women by Jerry Herman. So what songs are you doing in Jerry's Girls?
Boy, we get to do some wonderful things. You know, in the original Jerry's Girls, there was an eight-person ensemble, and we don't have an eight-person ensemble. So not only are we singing these great solos, we're the three of us, Christine Petty, Stephanie Umo, and myself, we are also singing some great ensemble numbers.
Well, so what are your
ensemble numbers include things like, you know, one song actually was written specifically for Jerry's Girls, a song called Take It All Off.
Ooh.
And I don't want to say anything more about that because there's a lovely twist in the middle of the song that Christine Petty gets to deliver. But, you know, the ensemble were the ones who sang Name and Put On Your Sunday Clothes. So we act as that ensemble, or, La Caja Fall or The Best of Times. But as myself, I get to sing Look What Happened to Mabel. I get to sing Before the Parade Passes By.
Whoa.
I get to sing Time Heals Everything. I get to sing Wave Your Little Hand. I get to sing Wherever He Ain't. And I get to sing I Don't Want to Know from Dear World, which is such a haunting song, but it's so relevant to what's happening in the world right now.
Whoa.
There are people who live that song every day.
Well, you know what song I live every day? And I hope you're doing it. Shalom! From Milk.
I do not sing Shalom.
God damn it.
Well, Stephanie Umo sings Shalom.
Ah, yes. Oh, okay.
I might add. But then Christine and I do come in on the last two. Shalom, Shalom. So I do sing the word Shalom twice.
That's very important.
Yes.
Poetic stuff. And speaking of poetry, notice another insane segue here, by the way.
Yeah.
On your website, listed among the things that make you laugh are the poetry of Nipsey Russell.
Oh, my goodness.
Please share a Nipsey Russell.
Deep into the research.
Oh, yes. Oh, yeah. Sarah, well, the Gong Show is back, so people might actually remember who Nipsey Russell is. So please.
Well, Nipsey Russell did way more Match Games than.
Oh, Match Game, you're right.
And also a $25,000 pyramid as well. Dick Clark would always ask him for a poem.
So what's the famous.
You know, one of my favorite Nipsey Russell poems. It's a classic. Let's see. I can't remember exactly how it starts, but it's something like, men are in love with mermaids, but I can't tell you exactly why. There's too little women to make love to, and too little fish to fry.
That's both hilarious and racist. I love it. It's beautiful. It's beautiful there.
Racist to fish?
Well, no, just the
misogynist, certainly, but.
Well, that too, but your sort of blackish Nipsey Russellisms.
Oh, no. I wasn't actually I was doing his cadence.
Oh, okay.
Not his voice. There is a big difference between cadence and voice.
Oh.
If I was trying to imitate Nipsey Russell's voice, yes, that would be racist. But you can't do a Nipsey Russell poem without doing his cadence.
That's fair.
Because it's his delivery.
Now, speaking of cadence,
you know what I mean?
Yeah. You're right. You're absolutely right. I did not mean to impugn your.
No, and I certainly want to make it clear that cadence is such a big part of capturing any character. You can tell sometimes just by the cadence of a character who it is, and not necessarily doing an exact voice match. Like, for example, I realized that I could do not the voice of, but the cadence of Brian Williams, because the Brian Williams cadence is very, so I'm talking to my friend Rabbi Solomon, and he's a great guy on the radio, knows about the theater, and I'm just a kid from New Jersey, and I don't know much about that, but he is the expert, and let me tell, you know what I mean? Like, it's the cadence.
Oh, Well, yeah, or try you. If you can do Brian Williams, you can do Joe Franklin, I'll bet.
Well, exactly.
Everybody, my friends, can do the Joe Franklin radio program of the air.
And that's what people with Jackie Mason, it's the same thing.
Yes.
I don't necessarily have to imitate Jackie Mason's voice. I'm definitely not doing his voice, but his cadence.
However, apparently, or so I'm told, or at least so your website tells us, that one of the things that you can do is the cadence and maybe the voice of Charles Grodin.
Oh, no, but just one word. I can only imitate him doing one word. It's a useless talent, and I'll give it to you now.
Please.
No. That's my Grodin. That's my useless Grodin.
That's...
Thank you. Not many people appreciate that, so I thank you for that.
I picture him in my mind's eye, which actually needs a cleaning.
He's such a great performer. Anything he does, he makes better.
Well, you are making this episode of the Dave's Gone By radio program of the air better. Stephanie D'Abruzzo talking about theater, talking about your career. And I do still want to get back to, just for a bit.
Girls.
Well, we'll talk Jerry's Girls, but also having you cue. Because I love that show. Everybody loves that show. You were great in it. You were Tony nominated. Now, the one thing, and maybe this is just the nature of Broadway, but you're in the show.
Mm-hmm.
You are kind of known for it. You get a Tony nomination. First of all, you choose to leave, as opposed to running with the show until it closes.
Well, I was not the first person to leave the show. Johnny left the show a year before I did.
Right, but I'm saying you chose not to negotiate a new contract or stay another 6 months or a year. Why?
Well, here's the thing. I had the opportunity to do a show called I Love You Because, which ran off Broadway. Didn't run very long, but the thing is, what was starting to happen, I was with the show on Broadway for 2.5 years, which is a very long time.
Yeah.
The Vineyard for 3 months before that. Between previews and performances on Broadway, I did it more than 1,000 times. It's a good run.
But that's 1,000 paychecks, too. So, and
that's
a lot of actors.
No, you have to divide that by 8. But anyway.
Yeah, no, but you know what I'm saying. That's a steady, I mean, you were already working steady on TV.
Believe me, the only reason I left is because I was not getting opportunities to do other things. People actually asked me, can you sing without a puppet?
Oh.
People in the business.
Wow.
Me, can you sing without a puppet? When I had the opportunity to do a show that would show another side of what I do, one of the things that I love about performing is that, especially working on Sesame Street, is that I get to do a lot of different things. And I feel as though I love the opportunity to show range, and I wanted to be, even the things that people were asking me to do while I was doing Avenue Q on my nights off, benefits or whatever,
yeah,
they were all of the same ilk. They were all that same, it was either Kate Monster or maybe the occasional Lucy the Slut type of song, and I thought, well, I would like to grow. You know, part of my goal is to grow, is to get better. And it's like when you lift the same weight over and over again, you're not going to get any stronger. And my whole goal was to get stronger, get better. So when I had the opportunity to do a show that I had done some readings of, that involved showing a different side of me, playing a different kind of character that didn't have a puppet, I thought, well, this is a good opportunity.
Right.
To show people that I can do this. It's not that I was bored. It's not that I wanted to leave. It's that it was a good opportunity. I went while I had the opportunity.
Oh, no, I mean, I don't doubt that.
Would never come again. And I'll tell you something. If I hadn't left and done that show, I know for a fact that I never would have gotten considered to do the Scrubs musical. Because the writer of that episode, Deborah Fordham, had seen me in Avenue Q, but it wasn't until she saw me in I Love You Because, and she said, oh, my gosh, she should do the musical episode. And I never would have thought that she could sing, like, same thing, sing without the puppet. She wouldn't have thought of me for it.
That's fair.
If she hadn't seen me in I Love You Because.
It's just the one thing that bothers me, and it's about actors and actresses in general. It's like you to this date still have only one Broadway credit, and I'd be hoping that someone with your talent and your voice would have done a couple more Broadway or even a non-musical.
I hope you don't think that that's by choice on my part.
Oh, no, well, no. I'm saying opportunities.
That's what annoys you about actors. I guarantee you, there is not an actor sitting at home saying, yeah, I don't want to do Broadway.
No. I put it wrong. What I'm saying is that opportunities in Broadway, there's only 40-something theaters, don't come along that often. And you can audition for things from now until the moon. You're up against 1,000 other people. Likely, you're not going to get it unless you're already a star. So what I'm just saying is, it's kind of a shame that Avenue Q remains your only Broadway credit.
Well, these things happen, and I'm lucky, even if I never have the opportunity to do anything else on Broadway, I was really lucky to get to do that. I mean, the way that wound up happening, it kind of fell into my lap. It was very fortunate. I was so, so fortunate to get to originate the character in the reading and then grow with the show and then originate it off-Broadway and originate it on-Broadway and to have it run and to have it recorded. Most people...
No, they don't even get that, of course.
They don't get to do that. Yeah. So I'm lucky that I got the one. Maybe it would be greedy for me to say, I want more. Every actor wants more. Every actor wants to work. There's not enough.
Oh, yeah.
We always want more. Everyone wants more. It's human nature. We want more money. We want more food. We want more this. We want more that. It's human to want more. But as I'm getting older, I'm trying to put things in perspective and realizing, look, I got to do something that people still think fondly of, that they remember, that is still running. That's lovely.
Have you ever thought of going back for a brief period just to do it just as a, not a goof, but as kind of like a nostalgic thing?
Well, I think now, unfortunately, I'm too old. No one wants to see a 45-year-old Kate Monster.
No offense, but half the time they're looking at the actual puppet on your hand.
I understand that, but the people, if you look at the actresses who have come after me, they do seem to get younger and younger. After I left the show, I said I would be happy to come in as a vacation swing, but they never took advantage of that. So I put it out there. We've done, the original cast has reunited for some benefits. We did the Vineyard Gala, Vineyard Theater Gala a few years ago. We did the Lortel Awards a couple of years ago. We love getting together.
Oh, that's nice.
And it's just that the show is its own thing. It's good to want to go back, but if you live in the same thing over and over again, I would love to play it again. I think I'd have a different perspective on it now. But, you know, when I get to sing Fine, Fine Line in a concert setting, not with the puppet, not as Cape Monster, I perform it differently. I perform it as myself, and it's out of the storyline of the show, so it has slightly different take and slightly different meaning for me. And I still get trotted out every now and then to sing Fine, Fine Line, which I never mind. It's a beautiful song to sing.
No, but it's like me. It's like if I'm doing services in shul and I sing Disco Duck, it's very different whether I have the tallis on or the tallis off.
Yes.
It, you know, just a whole different take on the song.
Yes.
Not a laugh.
Good.
Not a laugh
good.
Right there.
That
okay.
Is good.
I should have had a laugh. Let me ask you, besides I Love You Because and besides having UQ, mm-hmm. what are one or two of your favorite roles that you've done, be it either off or off Broadway or perhaps on TV? And it doesn't have to be with a puppet. It can just be you.
I mean, I had a wonderful time. Yeah, I've done two other York Theatre Mufti shows, both in 2011. We did the Mad Show.
Is that Sondheim?
Well, Sondheim did one song for it, but that was Mary Rogers.
Ah, right.
Did most of that, and then also the guys from Mad Magazine. I mean, it was basically, I don't want to say Mad Magazine the musical, but it was 1966, and it was that acerbic satirical take on, you know, it was very pre-Laffin. I don't think it's a mistake that Joanne Worley was in the Mad Show. I did the Linda Lavin track, so I got to sing The Boy From, which, yes, Mr. Sondheim.
That's a funny song. That's
the lyrics for that, not the music. That was Mary Rogers. But I did the Mad Show, and then we did Tomfoolery, which is...
Oh, Tom Lehrer, I love him.
Yes, and that was directed by Pamela Hunt, who's directing Jerry's Girls right now.
Oh, notice how you brought it back to Jerry's Girls, which
by... I have to mention Pam with Jerry's Girls, my goodness, and I did the Mad Show with Christine Petty, who's also in Jerry's Girls. I mean, we've been having talkbacks at the York, and it's wonderful how we already came to this production of Jerry's Girls with these past connections, having done Mufti's and having worked together. But I loved doing those shows. Those were fantastic. And I really loved doing the Scrubs musical that aired about 10 years ago. That was incredible, incredible fun. But really, I am having the time of my life doing Jerry's Girls. I am so lucky to get to do something that encompasses all of the things that I want to do in theater, all the things that I've ever wanted to do on a stage. I kind of get to do in this show. And this is going to sound crazy.
Okay.
It's even more than Broadway, seems like a culmination for me.
Wow.
Because there is so much variety to what I get to do. I use every crayon in my box to color that show. And there aren't a lot of shows that you can say that about. I mean, in the Mad Show, it was mostly doing fun characters and, you know, singing very off-kilter songs. Great stuff. Tomfoolery, same thing. I got to perfect my Irish dialect.
And, oh, you had to do the Irish ballad?
I did do the Irish ballad. Yeah. Loved doing the Irish ballad.
Rickety-tickety,
and,
yeah.
But, you know, again, very review-style singing. But these Jerry Herman songs, the range of what I get to do, I get to be funny and I get to be silly and I get to be serious and I get to be wistful and I get to be all of the kinds of roles that I've always wanted to play in 2 hours. That's a dream. It's really a dream come true. And I know we're working with rolling music stands and binders and it's in the basement of a church, but I get to do this in New York City with amazing people.
And actually, that is one lucky thing about your career, because you do so much voice work, and you've done Broadway and off-Broadway, you don't have to go schlepping back and forth coast to coast a lot. You don't do a lot of regional theater or summer theater that people...
A little bit, but not much.
Yeah, is that...
Those gigs are hard to get.
Really? I would figure those are easier than getting a Broadway and off-Broadway slot.
Well, regional theaters are actually presenting work that is on par with anything you see in New York. They are getting this top-level talent. They have amazing artistic directors who are curating. Sometimes they're doing original work. Sometimes they're, you know, bringing in shows that have already been done. I did one of the first regional productions of Title of Show at St. Louis Rep.
Right.
A great, great theater. There are so many regional theaters that I would kill to work in. I would love to work at La Jolla or Fifth Avenue or Barrington or, I mean, Walnut Street. There's so many. And the ones that I'm not listing, please don't think I don't care. Oh, my goodness. And Chicago theater. Theater is harder to break into than New York theater. So, you know, regional theaters, I think, unfortunately, there's a very untrue cliche about what regional theater is. Regional theater has some of the greatest work is being done in towns outside of New York.
Well, of course, I mean, it's almost become, on some level, a feeder for Broadway and off-Broadway to some extent also.
Well, in both directions.
Yeah, oh,
you have a lot of Broadway veterans doing regional theater.
So it's a feeder and a regurgitator, I guess you could say. It does both there.
But, I mean, basically, what it is, and, you know, making no connection to Broadway whatsoever, they are doing such good work that they can attract top talent all over the country.
Yeah, but you are top talent.
Well, that's very kind of you to say. Thank you.
Yeah, but do you try? Are there things that you don't even sort of try for, or you still kind of audition for a lot of stuff and you just don't get it?
It's just hard to get It's hard to get into the room. It's hard to get submitted, and for whatever reason, some of it, my Sesame schedule does interfere with some things, so that makes it a little more difficult. But you know, other things. Look, there are so many. We are an embarrassment of riches when it comes to performers, not just in New York, but all around the country. They are all vying for a limited number of jobs, be it on a stage, be it behind a microphone, be it in front of a camera. And any actor will tell you, great actors will tell you, I couldn't get seen for X, I couldn't get seen for Y, I couldn't get seen for Z.
Oh, let me tell you something. When I was shooting the Beauty and the Beast movie,
yes.
I was up for Belle. One audition, nothing. Never got a call back.
Glad you got the appointment.
It's because I'm Jewish.
You should consider that a triumph.
That's true. You're right. I came off too Jewish.
Rabbi.
Yeah.
I think that's the. There is definitely a misconception about an actor's life, and unfortunately, it gets perpetuated through pop culture. They think that only actors on a certain level do commercial work. Only actors on a certain level do off-Broadway or off-off-Broadway or regional theater. They think that the bad actors do the little jobs. That's not true.
No.
I mean, I commercial work has become even more competitive than it ever has been.
Well, I think commercial work has changed because now they want more quote-unquote real people, people who look like real people, rather than...
that, more celebrities are doing voiceovers who never used to do used to do voiceovers before, and unfortunately a lot of work is going non-union.
Oh.
So there is work, but it has dried up for many people, and yes, reality television, and yes, people who aren't actors, aren't performers, everything has changed. And also, there are just simply more people who want to do it. I bring up Fran Brill again. Fran Brill did a lot of work in voiceovers in the 70s, and she said at that time, there were really only a handful of women doing voiceovers regularly. And as the years went by and more women, it just saturated the talent pool.
That's, I mean, I remember...
So there are people who wouldn't do voiceovers, or they would look down their nose. Think about television. So many film actors would look down their nose at television. I won't do television. I won't humble myself to doing commercials. Well, now everybody's doing everything. So you have a finite number of projects and a seemingly infinite pool of extremely talented people. The math just isn't going to work out most of the time.
Have you ever done a Law and Order, since everyone seems to have?
No, I haven't done a Law and Order. I auditioned once. And then there was another audition that I had to turn down because of a conflict. But, I've never done a Law and Order. Look, like I said, nothing that I haven't done hasn't been for lack of trying. Sometimes the iron gets cold, Rabbi.
Oh, my God. Let me tell you about that. When I do circumcisions, I have
a
nice warm slicer. Otherwise,
good for you.
Yeah, oh, absolutely.
Good for you for being mindful. Happiness is a... Never mind. I was just going to say happiness is a warm moil, but that was...
don't even want to go there.
Yes, exactly. But no, so again, I get older, the gratitude... It just becomes, I am such a ham that any job that comes my way, some of the voiceovers I've done, I mean the tiniest of potatoes, I enjoy every drop of it. I really do. I've gotten to do some great voiceover work on a PBS show called Nature Cat.
Ooh, okay.
And my friends Adam and David Rudnan with Spiffy Pictures. I've worked with Spiffy on quite a few projects. I love doing these little one-off, one-line characters. I did my Sheldon Leonard imitation on Nature Cat.
Oh, please, come on, please.
No, come on. Don't, please. Look. Oh, well, no, I did. Oh, those aren't my footprints. I'm sorry. No. Actually, what I'm waiting to do...
I'm not getting the real Sheldon. I gotta remember him,
scratchy,
but...
Yeah. I do a very good Gary Marshall that I'm dying to do.
Ooh.
In voiceover. No, because, Rabbi, comedy is very specific. And I always knew I worked with the greats. I worked with Sheldon Leonard, and then I taught little Richie Cunningham how to be a director. I'm so proud of his comedy work, but he also does the serious stuff too. It's not very sexy when a woman does Gary Marshall imitation.
And actually, that also could pass for Anthony Scaramucci, by the way, just so you know.
But no, my Sheldon Leonard is.
That too.
So that's where it is. Okay, that's where I had to go to. Yeah.
Okay.
Because I played a shady squirrel.
Oh, I see it.
It's going to be a long, cold winter. that's okay. Thank you. It took me a moment.
That was good. That was good. Okay. Yes. By the way, it's
weird. Take you a moment. This is unedited, unrehearsed. Sometimes the dirty secret with voiceover is sometimes you got to warm up into it.
Now, did you ever think of going, since you were into puppets, of doing ventriloquism, or that was never your bent?
I'm telling you, ventriloquism is a very specific skill.
Okay.
It is a skill. You can either do it or you can't. And, oh my God, I was just thinking about Jay Johnson yesterday.
Oh, yeah.
Because I met, long story, but Jay Johnson from Soap, Chuck and Bob.
Yeah.
One of my favorite performers. I loved Soap, and I got to see his show, The Two and Only.
That was a wonderful show. Yes.
And we were concurrently doing Avenue Q. Nicest man, brilliant ventriloquist. He really understands the history of ventriloquism, where it comes from. But, you know, again, it's just another style of puppetry. Again, like tap and jazz is to ballet or any other kind of dance, ventriloquism is a whole other... type of puppetry. It's a whole other type of performance.
Speaking of which, can you, because you make your living mostly, 80% of your living as vocally, as doing voiceovers and singing, and even when you're doing Jerry's Girls, it's more about the songs, since it's a review more than a book musical. So do you do voice work? Do you work with a coach still? Do you need one? Do you not?
Well, I don't sing enough to be able to afford the vocal coaching, but I have learned some very good technique that I try to remember when I have to do it. But with the puppetry and the character voices, really, that's just, again, it's about play and figuring out ways to do it so that it doesn't hurt, so that you're not tightening your voice or straining it in any way. I mean, don't get me wrong, there are times when, you know, I'll try to book a session with someone if there's something that's really challenging. But I've been really lucky to work with coaches in the past who've given me good technique that I have been able to carry. But again, I haven't done enough singing to be doing it regularly lately.
Sure. We've been talking with Stephanie D'Abruzzo. Please, first of all, find out more about her. She has a hilarious and wonderful website that you should all check out. It's Stephanie with the PH way, Stephanie D'Abruzzo. There's no apostrophe in the URL there. twozs.com. Oh, just Google it. They'll find it somehow. And then
it should come up first.
Yeah. And then, of course, go see her. You have three more chances this afternoon, tonight, and then tomorrow matinee at the York Theater in St. Peter's Church. It's over on Lexington Avenue. They got it in the basement. It's a nice little theater there. For more information about Jerry's Girls, which has all the songs of Jerry Herman in it, yorktheater.org, and it's theater with an R-E in the pretentious English way, yorktheater.org. Last question for you, Ms. D'Abruzzo, and it's just been a delight and a joy here. You, as we began, are Italian.
Yes.
You married a nice Jewish boy.
Yes.
So,
yes.
Religiously, do you do one holiday, two holidays? You don't have kids, right?
We don't have kids, no.
So it's not
he's my giant kid.
Oh, yeah, well.
Go on my website, there's a great picture. He built the match game set out of Legos.
Ah, okay, so he's got free time. That's good.
It's what he does to relax. He's a writer. But anyway, he's my big kid. He still plays with Legos. Even though he's making, beautiful match game sets with them. We do both. He's not very orthodox, and I'm a little lapsed. So we do sort of semi-secular versions of both.
Okay. Do you do a Seder for Pesach, for Passover?
I do not host a Seder, no. No, if we go to a Seder, it's usually a family member's.
Okay, but
I'm sorry. I've been a very bad little shiksa.
Well, you don't make him baptize anybody. That would be very bad.
No. Sometimes there's a difference between religion and faith.
Hmm.
And I believe that the two can be hand in hand, but they can also exist separately.
As well, what do you believe? I'm wondering.
I believe many things. I do believe that there is some greater force than we are aware of. Some people call it God, some people call it fate, some people call it angels, fairies,
the deep state,
Yahweh,
yeah,
Buddha, Muhammad, whatever it is. I believe that there is something that we as humans cannot understand that is greater than ourselves.
I think that's...
That miracles are possible, and that there are miracles in the world, and that we need to, on Earth, sometimes be those miracles as well.
Ooh. That's nice. And I do believe miracles.
I
believe miracles are possible because I'm on the radio, and that's a friggin' miracle. And it's
and
a miracle.
Certainly my career is a bit of a miracle.
Oh, now. I think it's miraculous that I get to talk to incredibly funny and talented people like Stephanie D'Abruzzo. Go see her in Jerry's Girls. Stephanie, I wish you more growth in what, and not the growth like the kind I get on my back, but real actual creative growth in the work that you do. And I hope to see you more on Off-Broadway, hear you more on the TV, whatever you go on to do. Stephanie D'Abruzzo, thank you again for being in the neighborhood, and shalom to you.
Thank you, Rabbi Saul.
Bye-bye now.
Bye-bye.